Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast, bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings, listeners, and welcome to the Horror Hill podcast. I'm your illustrious host and narrator, Eric Peabody. Today is the inaugural episode of Season 15, and I've got one hell of a story for you. In fact, it's a bit too robust for us to handle in a single episode, so we'll be splitting it across two. The story is Restoration by Jordan Eilbert. Our protagonist is Fred, a hardworking man with a loving family. Fred works in restoration. He's the guy you call when your building floods or gets smoke damage or stuff like that. Stuff like that sometimes includes stranger things, like cleaning up blood. But Frank doesn't bat an eye at those jobs. He's quick, he's thorough, and he doesn't ask questions. But with this new job, Frank can't help but wonder, how exactly does one get bloodstains across a patch of marble 10,000 square feet big? And up the walls, and on the ceiling? And why is there now a strange character coming by Frank's house and asking questions? All valid concerns, and by the time Frank realizes what he's gotten himself into, it's far too late to back out. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Jordan Eilbert, I give you Restoration, Part 1. Part 1. I work in restoration. your house or business floods? My crew comes in, dries everything up, cleans the baseboards, preps the place, tosses the ruined stuff into a dumpster, and hauls it away. We leave the place clean and ready for a fresh coat of paint. I'm usually pretty proud of the work me and my crew does. We do it all, too. Mostly, we have to do flood damage, but there are times when we get called to rich folks' houses to remove stains from stone and concrete structures. I've had a museum call for the same. I've made a name for myself in being able to get just about any stain out of any stone. You think it's easy, or that you can just scrub away a stain, but folks forget that marble isn't solid material. It's porous, and it sucks in liquid. That's why polish and maintenance are important. I'm not naive, though. Plenty of times I get called in for red wine. Yeah, okay, I get it. You were partying with a hooker, she OD'd, cracked or coked out head on a coffee table, and suddenly there's a pool of blood on the marble floor of your penthouse and you can't get the stain out. Worse? The wife's home next week. I've done the cleanup enough times to know a few things. 1. You don't ask stupid questions. Hell, half the time the hooker's fine or would have OD'd anyway with or without the expense of John, so no skin off my nose. And if you're cleaning up the scene before the cops can show up, honestly, that's on them. I have a job to do, and I do it. 2. Don't remember these people. I'm not some guy who's going to get brought in on some indictment hearing or some stupid tabloid media circus, all because I decided to suddenly have a good memory. I do a job like this, I get your address, I show up, I shake your hand, I call you Mr. Smith, and then I leave. I delete your address, and I carry on with my life. The less I know, the safer I am. That being said, I don't get the blood cleanup very often. It's normally innocent stuff. Wine, sewage, flood water, sometimes human feces. You think it's gross, but it's easier than anything else to clean. The weirdest request? I need to give you context on weird. I had a call to clean up a place after something called a Luna Party, which somehow involved a whole lot of menstrual blood and dancing in it. Next time, bring a tarp. But that's not my weirdest call. It was a Friday. I don't know why that mattered when I got a call. The secretary was out for lunch, as was the rest of the crew, so rather than let it go to voicemail, I took the phone call. This was my first mistake. M&C Restoration Inc., Fred speaking. Yeah, I'm Fred. There was a pause, and then a guy's voice comes over, kind of timid. Yes, hello. I understand from your ad you can remove stains from all sorts of stone. Marble as well?
Kind of our specialty, I boast. What sort of stains are you talking about?
Blood.
I never had someone just out and out say it. I get all the pussyfooting around, sure. Wine, salsa, sangria. Sangria was my favorite, considering the blood is in the name. But this guy just out and said it, plainly.
How large an area?
Another pause.
I'd say about maybe 10,000 square feet?
Not the property, I tried to clarify. Just the stain.
Yes, I know.
You need 10,000 square feet of marble, which is stained in blood, cleaned.
Yes.
This time I had to take a moment. How many gallons was that? I thought back to that lunar party thing or whatever, but even that was only a single floor.
I'm sorry, some context is probably needed.
The voice on the other end continued.
My name is Timothy. I work in antiquities. A curator friend of mine referred me to you after you managed to clear her museum steps of some blood that apparently occurred after someone took a nasty fall.
I cleared my throat.
Right. Okay. Yes, I'm still just trying to process 10,000 square feet of stained tile.
Is it too much?
I was still a bit dumbfounded.
Let me be frank. This site was the location of a rather bloody massacre some time ago. My colleagues and I have already examined the site in its entirety and we're looking to begin restoration.
At this point, my concern got overridden by cash. Antiquities? Historical site? This sounded like a fat government contract. Christmas came early to old Freddy. What's your budget for this project of yours?
Time is more of the essence than anything else. We need the site cleaned in preparation for other restoration efforts, so as soon as possible would be preferred. Your fee is, essentially, yours to name. You're literally the only one who I can call on for this task.
Haggling wasn't this guy's strong suit. Sounded to me like he needed to read The Art of the Deal.
You're talking a whole lot of space to clear. 10,000 square feet is a whole lot of floor.
Oh, it's not all floor. A good portion of it is on the walls and ceiling.
How high is the ceiling?
About 50 feet.
I was silent again. I was going to need to rent a scissor lift for that. I thought for a moment and cleared my throat.
I'm gonna need a whole lot of equipment, materials, and at least 5 guys if you want this job done right and fast.
Of course.
How long has the marble been stained?
There was a moment of silence.
By the current timeline? Oh, well, maybe 200... Wait, what's the current year again?
I wasn't too sure why he was asking, but I figured I shouldn't sound stupid. It's 2018.
350 years, roughly.
I thought for a moment, thinking about how, this being the United States, there was no way for there to be a structure like he was talking about. I ignored him and assumed he had to be wrong. Anything over a decade is as set in as it's going to be, anyway. I took a breath.
I can't do it for less than 30 grand.
I figured he'd work on needling the price down, but then he shocked me again.
Understandable. I'm assuming I can ignore a number of taxes and paperwork if I provided a cash payment?
I coughed in shock, nearly swallowed my cigarette.
Yes, certainly.
Cash? I'm going to have this job done and it was going to be tax-free? I felt like I just won the lotto.
So the job itself comes up. I've got my crew rolling to the address. The address has a huge rustic gate, chain on the front, typical of a site you're not allowed to get to. I see a guy standing about 6 foot in a black trench coat, black sunglasses, gloves, black dress shoes and slacks, brown hair, and pretty pale. He doesn't say a word, and unlocks the chain on the gate, pulled it off pretty quick. I thought it was a heavier gauge than he made it seem, but I was probably just mistaken, being in a huge truck and not too close to the gate. The guy opens the gate up and walks up to the side of the truck.
Fred, yes?
He says flatly. I nod, reaching my hand out to him. You're Tim?
Timothy, yes.
He shakes my hand, firm handshake, and his hair is cut short, trim, proper. Military? I ask. He nods, stepping back and pointing down past the gate, motioning with his non-directing hand to move. Definitely military, so I nod and drive up. I see a huge mansion, white and gray stone steps, old siding falling apart, boarded up windows, messed up roof, and the entire place looks to be knocked down, but getting rebuilt was apparently on the docket for today, and I was getting paid to not care. As we unload, Timothy opens the front doors and knocks them in place. He starts talking loudly.
The doors need to be open at all times while you work. There's no ventilation inside.
He has a pair of pretty heavy-duty door stops on each door. From the outside, I cannot see anything inside. Nothing but pitch black.
You're going to need lighting, so I hope you brought a generator.
I laugh while my crew unloads the trucks and sets up 2 generators, pulling down some cans of gas. This isn't my first rodeo.
So it would seem,
says Timothy, and then he walks inside and vanishes into the blackness. I motion for the crew to set up the lights, and the first place we go is on either side of the door. He wasn't kidding about needing lights. The boards were perfect, and the inside was absolutely dark, like the middle of a moonless night dark. I hear the generator kick on, and the lights perk up a second later. And that's when I see a massive white face appear out of the dark with brown drips across it. It's an angelic woman, carved expertly out of marble. I swear I can see the pores on her cheeks and the split ends of her long hair. There's a second similar statue about 30 feet to the left,
and it's covered in brown stains. I hear one of my guys, Chavez, speak up.
My God!
That's about when I got the hint something wasn't right. Chavez spoke up again.
Hail Mary, our Father protect us.
I picked up Chavez from a day laborer site about 1 year ago, and I've been paying him under the table ever since. He's either from Mexico or Honduras. He was a good worker, so I never bothered to care, and could never ask.
This is too much. This place is cursed to high hell. The blood's all over those angel statues. What is this?
Chavez was rambling. You see, the reason I never could ask Chavez where he came from was that Chavez doesn't speak a goddamn word of English. Timothy's voice soon echoed across the room, walking over the solid marble in various states of stains and scrapes.
I trust this isn't too much for you or your men.
I didn't actually spot where he had come from, but I wasn't paying attention before Chavez got a smack upside the head from one of my full-timers, Pete.
Since when the hell can you speak English, Chavez?
When the hell did you learn Spanish, Peter?
Chavez asked. Timothy seemed agitated.
Gentlemen, if we can begin the job now.
And he walked past us and outside.
I turned to both of my men. Pete, Chavez, shut the fuck up, the both of you. We do this job, go home, and all get a good paycheck, okay? No more questions. Let's get moving.
This place is cursed,
Chavez said before turning around and pulling in the pressure washers and detergent bottles. I got up in Chavez's face now, certain he could understand me.
Then the quicker we get started, the quicker we can get the hell out of here. Understand?
Understood,
Chavez said, still looking confused. Pete then spoke up.
Hey, boss.
He focused a flashlight to a portion of the floor where the stain ended. I looked over to where he was shining the light. The brown stains were everywhere, as described, but toward where one large swath of brown ended was an impression on the floor and the stuff, much clearer. The impression was of a sword, which had to have been drenched in blood. The sword-shaped stain didn't bother me, though. It's what was apparently holding it. An outstretched arm shape, and then two massive wing-like stains on either side, with a human-like face profiled on the floor. Everything below the waist of the figure vanished in the larger stain across the floor. We each had an idea of what we were looking at, but we were too stunned at the sight. Chavez was the first to break the silence.
Angels died here.
Part 2. I heard what Chavez said, but I don't think I was letting it sink in. Angels don't die. Angels don't exist, personally, but that's neither here nor there. If angels existed, I'd have seen a damn miracle or two around my house. My mother was a god nut, super religious, yet nothing saved her from her car accident or stopped my father's cancer. No, there's some rational explanation. I know there is. This imprint on the floor, sure, it could be human. Timothy did say there was a massacre here over 300 years ago. So, some guy died in a pool of his own blood, sword in hand, and the rest pooled in the shape of wings. No, it couldn't be wings. This was kind of like a Rorschach test. Someone sees puffy clouds, Chavez sees wings because there are two giant 30-foot statues of angels flanking the center of the damn room. It's in his head, that's all. I get a hold of myself. Chavez, Pete, get the scissor lift in here, help out Bob and Mike, and let's get this job over with. Sooner we start, sooner we're done. Chop, chop. Pete gets motivated pretty quick, but Chavez is now on one knee, making the cross over his chest and saying God's prayer. I ignore him for now and get to busy myself with the task at hand. The most difficult problem first. The statue on the left needs to be cleaned, and carefully, since it's a work of art. As Bob and I are guiding the scissor lift into the place, I hear Timothy shout something at Chavez. I rush over. Now I feel like I'm on a normal work site. Hey, don't shout at my guys. What's going on? I intervene.
Chavez has both of his hands up, stepping back from a huge structure of canvas and plywood, making up a barricade to the right side of the entrance.
I was just checking for more stains, Fred.
Understanding Chavez is a new thing for me, but it's not entirely unwelcome. Timothy seems exasperated.
I appreciate your due diligence, but this area is unstable. I cannot have anyone pass these barriers. I apologize, I should have made that clear. The main hall is where the cleaning must be done. Only the main hall. Any area that's barricaded is unsafe. I can't be held liable for the safety of your men if they wander past them.
I look to Chavez. You heard the man. Help Bob with the scissor lift and then get to pre-treating the statue. Be careful, okay? Chavez nods and looks to Timothy.
What saint is she?
Timothy looks at the statue for a moment and gets this kind of faraway look in his eyes.
Dinah of Enoch.
Chavez gives Timothy thumbs up and says,
I'll take good care of Saint Dinah. She will sparkle.
He runs off to help Bob with the scissor lift, and a very confused Bob and Chavez make their way over to the statue of Dinah, I guess. Timothy is smiling an odd kind of smile, and I almost break my no questions rule for a moment. But I get my hard hat on and start shouting at Bob when I see he's not wearing a harness on the lift. Typical worksite stuff. Gotta remind the old-timers they're mortal and make sure the greenhorn of the group doesn't fuck something up. I'm happy to slide back into my routine. It wouldn't last, of course.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
About halfway through the day, we're just about done getting the bust of this statue clear, and I gotta say she's looking as good as new there, when we hear a huge bang. It sounds almost like someone took a large aluminum pipe and smashed it down onto the marble. It echoes over our tools, and even the guys with ear protection are taken back by the sound. I scream and shout to cut the equipment and tell Bob and Chavez to get off the scissor lift. Lord knows if something blew on the damn thing. It's a rental, after all. I call Mike over to have a look. Mike slides under the lift as Bob and Chavez unhook their harnesses. Chavez looks to me.
It wasn't the lift, boss.
Well, then what the fuck was it? Chavez points to behind one of the barricades, and I spot Timothy running towards it. I think I hear him mumble something like,
"This can't be happening right now."
I shout to him. Hey, Tim, you need a hand? Timothy shoots me a stern look and in a pretty practiced officer tone commands us,
No one is to go beyond this point. Something may have collapsed. If there's an issue, I'll let you know. You stay here.
And disappears behind a piece of plywood and canvas. I look to my guys and tell them to continue to inspect the scissor lift and then get back to work if everything's okay. God only knows what compelled me to walk toward the barricade at that moment. Morbid curiosity? A lapse of sound judgment? Mini stroke? Still not sure to this day. But man, was this at least the third or fourth stupidest thing I did that day. I get just close enough to hear voices. There's a woman on the other side, and Timothy.
I'm sorry, I truly am, but I'm afraid they're all gone.
I hear Timothy say, hushed, but still loud enough for me to hear.
I know your pilgrimage must have been arduous.
The female voice sounds frantic and heartbroken.
But that can't be. Surely this cannot be. Who would do such a thing? Who could?
Was it an army?
It was just two people, unfortunately. He sounds almost guilty. They seemed to come in relative peace, but it was soon apparent that at least one of them had other ideas. All fought valiantly, but they couldn't be stopped. The woman's voice is trembling.
It was her, wasn't it? The daughter of Luke.
The pressure washer kicked in and startled me while drowning them both out, and I realized how close I was to the barricade trying to listen. I stepped back and made my way quickly to the rest of the group, keeping an eye on the far barricade Timothy had vanished behind. I don't see Timothy emerge until we're just about done for the day, the statue clean. He stops as he sees it, in reverence of some kind, I guess, looking it over silently. I walk over to him. So far, so good. We should be able to get some pre-treatment on the flooring, let it sit overnight, and then we'll hit it hard tomorrow. Timothy just nods.
Your men do swift work.
That's what we do, I say proudly. Pete starts yelling for me from across the room. I excuse myself and hustle over. What's up? I look at where Pete is, and he just points down. There's, for lack of a better word, a gash in the flooring. I need to explain why this floor is unusual, more so than just having blood all over it and more than the shapes in said blood. You see, this floor doesn't have seams. It's a solid chunk of marble. I've seen some expensive walls and floors that are huge slabs, sure, happens all the time. If you have enough money, they'll tow a mountain to your house. But this was a mansion worth of floor that, for the life of me, I could not find one damn seam in. Now, the gash, it's almost 10 feet long, and at the center, it looks almost 6 inches deep. Even with a light, while I can see the bottom, it looks pretty dark inside the gash. Pete looks to me. I'm going to ignore how this got here and just ask what we're supposed to do. The surface scratches are easy to buff out, but this isn't going to buff out easy. I call Mike over to have a look. Mike looks it over and runs his hand over the edges of the opening, as well as the sides. It's all stained, of course. Jesus. He stands up and looks it over. That's one clean swipe. There are no cutting marks like you get if you were slicing into it with a floor cutter, so, he starts thinking. Can toss in quick set to fill it, get it most of the way full anyway, and we could just toss on some filler and polish, but I think we can do better with some resin, make it look a bit more natural. It's up to the client, though. This is going to cost extra. I look it over. A 2-inch wide, 10-foot long, and 6-inch deep gash in the marble certainly wasn't in the order. I look to see Timothy is already approaching us. Just the man I need to see. Timothy looks down and shakes his head.
She did some serious damage.
Don't ask, just don't. I keep saying that in my head. We can fill it and get it level, may even make it look pretty, but this wasn't in the original quote, so I'd say about, another $4,000. I'd feel bad if this entire job didn't feel like some crazy funhouse. Timothy just nods.
Fine. Don't go crazy, just so it's level and no one trips over it.
Mike heads out to get the materials we need, and I drag over one of the sandblasters. The gash is smooth, and it'll need to be rougher if that quickset is going to fill it in right. Everyone gets to work while I start to blast into this thing. Then, something black shoots straight up out of the gash and clatters somewhere behind me. This is why I wear a hard hat, folks. I cut the blaster and look around. Doesn't seem like anyone else heard anything. I look over to what popped out of the gash and realize the gash is about 9 inches deeper, and I can see it's still solid marble, no subfloor or dirt. Nothing's behind me but my closed toolbox. Whatever popped up must have shattered when it hit the ground, or all I saw was sand and blood popping up out of the gash in the floor. I get my ear protection back on and finish up prepping the gash to be filled. We pack up for the day. The floor is pre-treated. We store the tools and such inside, and I do a quick head count. And I notice I'm short one Honduran. Oh yeah,
Mystery solved on that one. Chavez is from Honduras. I look around and then spot him coming out from behind the barrier, Timothy walking behind him, a hand on his shoulder. Shit. I run over.
Chavez, what the hell? You were told not to—
Sorry, boss. Won't happen again. He's very quiet and looks to Timothy.
Please consider. I do not mind.
It's dangerous, Jorge, Timothy says. Discuss with me later, yes?
Chavez just nods and walks off. What was that about? I ask. Timothy just walks past me.
I thought you didn't ask questions.
Not when it involves one of my guys. I clear my throat. Who, I'm sorry, disobeyed your instructions. Timothy glanced back at me, and with the light from the door behind him, I kind of got the best look at his ice blue eyes.
Ensure it doesn't happen again, Fred.
I just nod dumbly as the red flags keep waving in my head. Just don't show up tomorrow. Take the money, leave the gear, go on your merry way. Granted, I'd only been paid half of the job, but still, it was a decent amount. We get packed up, and the crew and I head out, packing my toolbox and other smaller items in the truck. I notice Timothy is locking up the doors of the place and then escorts us to the gates. He closes them with him on the other side. I pull my truck up to the gate. You're living on site? Timothy hesitates for a moment, but answers,
Yes, I have a trailer out back.
See you bright and early tomorrow, then. Timothy just nods and waves me off. I never actually paid attention to where he went from there. I turn to Chavez in the truck and ask, So what did you and Timothy talk about?
Kay?
Is all I get from Chavez. He has to be fucking with me, but I put it out of my mind. Drop Chavez off at his place. He waves, as always.
Gracias, Señor Fred.
And heads home. I head back home as well. At home, the kids are asleep, as is the wife, and I've got my toolbox in the garage. I pop open my toolbox as I've got to swap a few things in and out for the next day, specifically some mixing bits and the like. When I open my toolbox, however, something inside of it is certainly not a tool I have ever used. I suddenly recognize it. It's the object that came out of the gash. My toolbox was opened behind me. It must have closed when the thing slammed into it. The object is about 3 wide, deep in the center, 2 feet long, and about 3 inches thick at the top, tapering to a point at the bottom. It looks almost like a wedge, and I realize it's probably blood that seeped into this gash and solidified over the years. I pick it up, and it's light, but despite my attempts, I cannot break this thing. Looking at this object in the light for the first time, it almost looks like a blade. Either that or the shape of the gash just shaped this thing into one. The top is flat, the bottom comes to a point, not sharp, but it could be. Light seems to penetrate through the edge of this thing, and it's tinted deep red. The rest appears to be black. I didn't even know blood could become a solid, but I guess if there's enough of it, it's possible. It's about 10 after 11. When I swear, I hear 3 taps against my front door, as if I had a knocker or something. I don't, by the way. I leave the object in my toolbox, closing it and locking it, and head to the front door. I'm not an idiot. I make sure to check my closet next to the door, and I make sure my shotgun is loaded. It's after 11 p.m. What psycho comes knocking at someone's door at this time of night? I open the door halfway, and am greeted by an outstretched hand with a black ring on each finger, one of which was about to tap again on the door. The hand pulls back and clasps a wide-brimmed white hat, removing it from his head and lowering it to about chest level. One hand is behind him, and he's standing a good 6'3", wearing a white duster of some sort and a red tie over a black, very expensive-looking dress shirt. He has white-rimmed glasses and yellowish eyes behind them, jet black hair that's well-kept. As he speaks, it's almost like his voice doesn't match his body. His face isn't odd, but doesn't stand out, and his voice sounds almost like it comes from an old cop movie. Evening, young man. I understand you're working with an associate of mine. Goes by Timothy?
While client confidentiality isn't my cornerstone, keeping my business out of my personal life sure as shit is.
Sorry, buddy, but I'm gonna have to ask you to talk to me during business hours.
His face falls slightly.
Now, this is important. Regarding that place you're working in, Timothy may have you misled, you see. He's using this place for his own means, not prosperity.
He pulls out some kind of business card and twirls it over each of his fingers before handing it to me. I look it over. It just has a phone number on it, no other information.
His other hand brings an unlit cigarette to his mouth. He inhales, smoke venting out of his nostrils.
If you were to happen across something of note, I'd be appreciative if you could contact me.
I'm not doing that. I'm not the kind to take things from a work site.
Normally, this is completely true.
A shit-eating grin spreads across this guy's face, and his oddly perfect teeth almost glisten in the light on my porch.
True. Be a shame to take something that you don't understand, only to wind up dead.
He cocks an eyebrow at me.
Or worse.
I've had it with the creep on my porch at this point. Listen, pal, hit the bricks, you hear me? Get the fuck off my property or I'll call the cops.
I try cocking a shit-eating grin myself now.
Or worse.
I don't think it works.
He stands still. I can barely tell if he's even breathing.
I pump the shotgun behind the door. I know there's no point to this. I just eject a perfectly good shell. But I want him to hear that I've got a gun. It's pump action, and it's in my hand.
His voice suddenly changes, or he just drops the facade, and a raspy voice like that of a lifelong chain smoker slithers out of his throat, half a whisper, half a wheeze.
Not parting with it then, eh? Well, I'll have it one way or another, for certain.
The accent's hard to place. It's not quite Middle Eastern, but it's not like anything I've ever heard.
I now pull the shotgun out and point it at his face.
And now I'm done with you. Whoever the fuck you are, get out.
He doesn't even flinch. He just grins more, a hissing chuckle dripping out of his mouth.
You are a fun one. Never once does your sort disappoint. Always resorting to the fire provided by Prometheus, yet...
He pauses, eyeing the barrel of the gun.
Never considering where it came from.
I'm not sure where he pulled it from, but he suddenly crunches into an apple he must have had in his pocket.
I suppose I'll have to reconsider. Maybe when you're asleep, like what happened to that hooker you cleaned up a few years back on Broadway.
My heart skipped a beat. I don't talk about clients, and clients would never talk about me. And I never go into that much detail either. I just restore shit.
A man of your skills is bound to clean up a homicide or two, knowingly or not.
He tilts his head back, looking at me down the barrel of the gun.
Cleaning up the sin left behind by those less scrupulous than yourself? Oh, we've been watching you for some time.
Now, for some reason, his eyes go wider.
Red, Fred.
I click the safety off of the shotgun and put my finger on the trigger. Get the fuck out of here right now. Another loud crunch of his apple, and he seems to mockingly throw his hands up, walking backward, keeping eye contact with me, with those yellow eyes.
Very well. Another time, then. You are a fun one, Red.
He turns and starts to walk off. I haven't moved the gun yet, still trained on him.
Don't fucking call me Red, you...
I realize I hadn't gotten this creep's name. The card that he gave me only had a phone number.
Whatever your God-given name is.
My mother always said that when she was mad. She'd shout out into phones all the time when telemarketers would give her fake names and shit.
What's your God-given name?
So it's a force of habit I picked up. I only said it when I was really pissed at someone. And this guy had me pretty livid.
bar none, the dumbest thing I apparently did all day. He stops dead on my walkway, and his hands slowly go down to his sides.
Ah.
His voice whispers out as if he had just won a prize.
You compel my God-given name?
His head starts to turn toward his right shoulder, but his shoulders aren't moving, not an inch. As I watch, I get ready to shoot. I swear, if his head does a full 180-degree turn, I don't care what his name is. I'll just start shooting until he stops moving, and probably pump a few more rounds in just to be sure. His head stops just shy of completely turned. I can see both of his yellow eyes as he slowly places his hat back onto his head. He grins, and I swear, I watch his pupils dilate till his eyes look almost entirely black with yellowish rings around them.
You can tell Timothy my name too.
He lets out another hissing laugh, and I swear I can hear the gun shaking in my hands for some reason.
It's Belial.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
I don't know why, but I feel the blood drain out of my face for a moment, and the whole area got a bit dimmer, as if something were draining it of light. I stagger slightly, but regain my footing, press the shotgun butt against my shoulder tightly, as if it's somehow going to help me. He turns away from me, and as he walks off, he wheezes out,
"Don't forget to tell Timothy I stopped by."
Another puff of smoke clouds around his head.
And what I stopped by for.
I pulled the gun back, shut the door, locked it, and shut the blinds. My heart was hammering in my chest as I checked the shells in my gun to ensure I had it loaded. I click the safety back on and I rush upstairs to my bedroom. My wife is fast asleep as I sit on the edge of the bed, gun in hand, staring at my front door down the stairs.
I swear, I can hear something. Three taps against my window at random times all night.
Part 3. Morning came, and I haven't put the shotgun down yet, still sitting at the end of the bed and checking the windows. It seemed like the tapping stopped sometime around dawn. I hear my wife's alarm clock go off and the sounds of her rousing from her sleep.
"Morning, honey,"
she mumbles, brunette hair a mass of frizz and tangles. "Morning," I say simply, making sure she's okay. She gets out of the bed and heads to the bathroom. I hear the kids' alarms go off next, and my boys are heard roughhousing in their room. My wife, Sandy, comes out of the bathroom, toothbrush in hand, and is about to motion for me to go contain the wild animals that are my 15 and 13-year-old boys. But she stops when she spots the shotgun in my hand. She quickly spits out her toothpaste.
"Fred, why the fuck are you holding the shotgun?"
She looks me up and down with her soft brown eyes.
"Are those the clothes you had on when you came home yesterday?"
"Honey, I got visited by a guy who's probably not human in the least, and he threatened the family if I don't return a red, blade-like object that came from some mysterious excavation site," is the most truthful thing I want to say.
It also sounds batshit insane, and the more I play the sentence over and over in my head, the more I question my own sanity. Fred, Sandy pokes my shoulder. Apparently, I was staring off into space while trying to think up a logical response to her completely rational question. Someone was on the lawn last night, was banging on the door and wouldn't go away until I got the shotgun. Sandy cocks her hip and shoots me one of those emasculating wife stares. So, rather than call the cops, you reach for the shotgun. I rack the shotgun and clear the ammo out before heading back down to the closet to put it and the shells back. Just wasn't sure if it was a prowler or kids. Sandy pokes her head out of the bedroom. And speaking of, Colin, Trevor, shake a leg. I close the closet and see my boys bounding down the steps in various states of dress, dragging their backpacks and heading to the table. They start fighting over cereal, and I quickly resolve it before a good scolding and getting them prepped for the bus. They finish up and are soon out the door with coats and sneakers on. My wife follows down next, wearing her robe. Don't you have that job today? I nod, looking at the time. Yeah, you're right. Then get motivated. I do, and head out the door, give the wife a kiss, and I'm heading back to the site, making sure my toolbox is with me. Same as the first morning, Timothy is there at the gate. He undoes the chain, and we all head to the mansion again. He props the doors open, and the crew heads in. I get the business squared away first. Chavez and Pete on the scissor lift to finish a few touches on the walls, while Bob and Mike get to mixing the quickset and filling in the gash in the floor. They also work on making sure there's a barrier between the gash and the rest of the work area, so we can work on the rest of the flooring. During this prep work, I notice Mike eyeing the doorway. Mike, you taking in the scenery? Mike points to the roof on the outside. Steepled. He leans into the doorway, shining a light up to the ceiling. Flat. I look to Mike. Attic. Mike pulls out a laser measurer. Steeple peak is 53 feet. He leans in. Ceiling is 50 feet. He leans out again. Low point steeple is 44 feet. He leans back in. Flat ceiling is 50 feet. I grumble a bit. Our last day here, Mike. Get the job done. That thing's probably on the fritz. My eyes aren't on the fritz, Fred. Damn your eyes. I see Bob looking at the same thing as Mike. Bob, do something. Bob seems startled, but manages to compose himself and get back to setting up his tools. I walk past the crew as they prep and pop open my toolbox. I find the strange object, or artifact, or whatever, out of my toolbox, and head toward Timothy. Timothy is observing Chavez and Pete when he spots me coming. This wound up in my toolbox, I say, holding the object out in front of me. Timothy looks it over without touching it, then looks to me after a solid minute. This came from here. I nod, from inside that gash in the floor. Timothy holds his right hand over the thing for a moment, then he starts guiding his hand back and forth over it slowly. I have no idea what he's doing. I'm about to ask, but as I look up, I notice his eyes seem to be a more intense blue than they were before, specifically his right eye. Timothy stops suddenly and just grabs the thing with his right hand and pulls it hard out of my grip. Thanks for returning this. He turns it over in his hand again. His eyes seem to be a normal shade of blue again. It's a very rare find. That's what your associate said. I was hoping to fish for some info. If this Belial guy knows Timothy, then Timothy should know him. Associate? He looks at me quizzically. I nod. Yeah, tall guy, kind of yellow eyes, way too perfect teeth. Timothy seems completely confused. I'm afraid I don't know anyone like that. All my associates are here. I figured it was time to stop trying to get him to spill the beans and just come out and say it. Listen, this guy shows up last night, tells me he wants that thing, and then tells me his name is Belial and that you know him. Timothy's face goes slightly pale.
You're certain he said Belial?
I just nod. Timothy looks to the object and then walks to the doors.
Sorry for this, but I hope you have everything you need inside.
And he shuts the doors. I'm a bit dumbfounded at this point. I thought you were concerned about ventilation.
Timothy just walks right past me and toward the barricade. Ventilation is the least of your worries at the moment.
I turn around and the entire crew is dead silent, not sure what to do, as we hear some banging, a few doors closing, and then some rustling past the barricade. I just come out and say it. We have this one last day to get the floor cleaned and get that gash and the smaller scrapes and holes plugged. Move it, now, and then we get the fuck out of here.
The crew seems pretty much on board, and the sounds of work soon overpower anything else. Almost half an hour since Timothy left, and I suddenly feel a hand on my shoulder, and I spin around out of sheer instinct. A small, round bottle is shoved into my hands.
That's for you, Timothy says, before he hands the bottles to the rest of the crew.
I look and see it's just a small round glass bottle with a long spout at the top and a cap. Timothy doesn't have the object in question any longer, and now he heads toward the barrier again. As he passes me, I grab him. I need at least a what the fuck is this explanation and a who the fuck is that for this Belial guy. I glare at him.
That, Timothy says as he points to the bottle, is for protection from Belial.
That's half of my questions, Tim.
Timothy.
Who the fuck is Belial? I reiterate.
He looks up, and I turn to see the large statue of Saint Dinah.
He's her opposite.
Before he can elaborate, he's back behind the barrier.
Just finish up today and get the fuck out, is all I can think of.
I grab a pressure washer and start working alongside my guys to get things rolling. It's now the end of the day, and it's cleanup time. Timothy opens the doors and checks outside for something, and we all start loading up the trucks. Timothy looks around, seemingly satisfied.
This is quite excellent work, Fred. Thank you.
I nod, hoping we can finish up shortly. The gash in the floor is fully repaired, and it'll take a full 24 hours to cure, but you can walk across it without much issue. We cleaned up the main hall here, got the walls, statues, ceilings, and of course the flooring squared away.
And the amphitheater, Chavez says, as he and Pete seem to be pulling equipment from the left side of the room.
Pete's face is pretty pale as he walks by, but I stop them regardless.
Amphitheater? Pete just looks to me and shakes his head.
I sigh. Chavez, that wasn't in the order.
Timothy chimes in. How did you get into the amphitheater?
I'm never going to get out of this place, am I?
So close, yet so far. Chavez happily shows us down the left-hand side of the hall and clicks on the lights. A pair of massive 50-foot double doors stand right in front of us and reach from floor to ceiling. The ceiling looks like it tapers to a dome.
It's not so much that there's a pair of massive 50-foot-tall double doors right in front of me that are almost 20 feet wide. It's what's on the damn things that bothers me. Carved into the marble are pictures of armor-clad angels with feathery wings. Under their feet are various horrible-looking creatures. A few of the angels stand over said defeated creatures with spears shoved in them. Others are in the process of smiting them. As the doors go up, the carvings get weirder. Not just feathery angels, but these other winged humanoid things. They look like lizards with wings. Stranger still is at the very top of these doors is a huge lizard-like figure, massive bat-like wings spread out, holding a shield with a cross on it and a huge spear. It's hard to see fully, but the doors seem to meet, or at least have to meet, in the middle, where his face would be. If you could call it a face, it was mostly a lizard head with horns over a long snake-like neck. Chavez takes a knee in front of the doors and starts reciting God's prayer. One of them clicks open. Voice-activated doors? I ask, hoping there's some kind of rational explanation and wondering why we haven't left yet. Chavez gets up and opens the door enough to walk in. He drags one of the lamps in and powers it up, motioning for us to come in.
We found this door here, and Pete and I cleaned it up. It was easier than the rest. The floor here is different.
I look down, and thank God, there's a seam. I finally found a seam in this place. But the seam is from marble to granite, and as I walk in, it's pretty clear that, oddly, everything is made of granite in this room. Stacking up into the darkness, so high I couldn't even tell, were chairs. These chairs were large stone chairs. They all culminated around a central chair. A chair is an understatement. This was a throne. The chairs all surrounded the stage we found ourselves on in a huge crescent. I turned to Timothy, whose gaze was transfixed on the central throne, that faraway look again in his eyes. Chavez was, again, the only one to speak.
St. Dinah?
Timothy nods and leaves the room.
I did not know how those doors opened. Thank you, Chavez.
I click the lights off and pull the lights out, making sure everyone is out of the now perfectly dark room. Good work, guys. Now let's get packed. I'm now overly invested in getting out of here as fast as possible. Pete leans over to me, whispering,
The door outside and the amphitheater doors are on the same wall, but there's no structure on the outside that could fit that.
I notice this as well as I walk outside the mansion, and then back inside.
Pete?
Yeah?
Don't think about it.
Pete just frowns at me.
I guess that's the best bet.
I give a final examination of the place before we kill the last of the lights, and I do have to say the place is looking nice. The white marble floor is polished to the point where I can see my reflection. The gash is sealed up nice and neat and just looks like a vein in the marble. Everything's looking perfect inside. The walls, the ceiling, the floor. I give a little nod to the St. Dinah statue and head to the door as the lights are taken down. I do my head count, and once again, I'm short a Honduran. I walk back inside and find Chavez kneeling in front of the statue of St. Dinah, only the light from the setting sun reflecting off the floor to light the room softly.
Chavez, end of the day. Let's go.
I'm staying, he says simply. I notice the bottle that Timothy handed him is empty.
Did you drink that?
I said, a bit shocked.
Do you even know what's in that, Chavez?
God's blessing.
Chavez stands up, and he just looks, for lack of a better word, happy, like a man without a care in the world.
I'm not just leaving you here, Chavez. The client isn't going to like you hanging around here.
Timothy chimes in, walking back from behind the barrier again.
Actually, Chavez agreed to assist me in a few things going forward.
I turn to look at Timothy.
You ever think I might not want to lose a member of my crew?
Chavez speaks up.
Mr. Fred, it's okay. I want to stay here. I want to help St.
Timothy interrupts.
He volunteered. It was hard to say no to him.
I give Chavez a look. He just smiles and extends his hand.
Nice working with you, Fred.
I ignore it. Get your head on straight. I'm your ride.
I'm staying, Fred.
I turn and shout,
Chavez, I'm not staying here any longer, okay? I'm out. Done. Finished.
I stop for a second.
I didn't say finished. I said finito. But for some reason, it came out as English.
I'm 100% done with this place, okay? I'm out. Job's done. You want to stay? Enjoy.
I head towards my truck, look to my toolbox, ensure nothing else is there that shouldn't be, close it, and out I go. As I head out of the doors, Timothy starts to close them behind us, him and Chavez still inside. Timothy looks to me before he closes the doors.
The remainder of your payment is in the truck, everything we discussed. I cannot fully express my gratitude.
He shuts the doors, and we load up.
I check the truck, and there's an envelope with the second half of the payment. I'm pretty shocked, and I count the bills a few times. I'm up a good 10 grand. I've heard of getting a tip, but this was a bit overkill. I know one pair of kids whose college fund is going to be in a good place after all of this.
At home, I'm doing the husband thing and cleaning up the dishes from the wife's dinner. Sandy and the boys are asleep, and that's when I hear a crash in the garage. I run to the closet, grab the shotgun, and fill it with a few shells before I rush in. I'm kind of expecting him at this point. My toolbox and all the tools are strewn about all over the floor. I see my garage door open slightly, and suddenly something small and almost glass-like hits me in the face. I look down to see what looks like a chunk of the object that was in my toolbox, about the size of a half dollar, land on the floor.
"This is but a pittance, Red Fred."
I turn to the voice, and I see glowing yellow eyes in the darkness.
"Not nearly what I need."
I pull the gun and go to shoot, but I feel a tug against my entire body, as if someone grabbed onto my sweatshirt from the front and pulled it downward. I barely take a step forward, but it's enough to get me to point the gun down at the floor. I look up as Belial's hand is dropping from being in midair, steam rising off the black rings on his fingers.
"Weak. Not this weak, though."
Another hissing laugh.
"He offered you protection. How noble."
Before I can take aim, a tool shoots off from my workbench and smacks into the shotgun, which lands a few feet from me. I lunge for it, but it suddenly leaps off the floor and into Belial's hand. Belial takes the shotgun and places it against his shoulder, looking down on me.
"As if a little bauble could do anything against me."
I try to get up, but he places his foot on my shoulder. I can't move.
"You've done something very foolish, Red Fred." He soon is crouching down onto his haunches over me. "You've hidden the only thing that can help me move up from a puppeteer to God."
The shotgun barrel now slides under my chin as I see Belial's face illuminated by the light coming from the doorway.
"But there's hope for you yet."
I'm shaking at this point, as I'm not sure how the tables turned so fast.
"You can fix your mistake, and in return, I'll spare you and your family's lives."
His voice wheezes, but not as much as it did before. He somehow seems stronger.
"Despite how I look, I've done quite a bit to exist in this world. Possessions normally a lesser demon's game. But the discovery of that sanguine amber..."
He cocks the shotgun.
"I could not resist."
I'm sweating and slowly trying to get to my feet. I'm on my hands and knees by the time I feel the barrel at the back of my head.
"Now, this is your next course of action. You will leave here right away and retrieve for me the sanguine amber you found. You will bring it back here and give it to me. In return, you'll be at my side rather than in my path."
I swear I can hear his grin somehow.
"Nod if you understand."
I just nod. What else could I do?
"If you do not bring me the amber, if you do not return home, or if you somehow reach out to Timothy for aid, I will go upstairs and I will make your children watch as I violate your wife in every way you can and cannot imagine."
I clench my fist. "If you lay a hand on her, I'll..."
"You'll what, mortal?"
I hear the safety slide off.
"Bleed on me."
I relax, and I hear the safety slide back as the gun clatters to the floor.
"You're on the clock, Freddy."
I look up, and the garage is clean. The door isn't open. There isn't even a sign that I dropped the shotgun, as it's sitting neatly on my workbench. I get to my feet, shaking, and turn to see a figure right behind me, causing me to shout in fear. Sandy is behind me, and she punches me in the shoulder. "Jesus, it's just me! Why are you so jumpy, Fred? What's going on?" I rub my shoulder where she nailed me, and I try to figure out how best to protect one's family from someone who's clearly not from this world. That's when I remember what Timothy handed me at the worksite. I rush to the closet and find my coat. "Were you on the phone? I thought I heard you talking to someone," Sandy asks. I pull the bottle out of my coat and turn to her, pressing the bottle into her hands. "Sandy, I know this is going to sound batshit nuts, but I need you to drink this and share it with the boys, okay?" "They're asleep, Fred," Sandy says curtly. She looks at the bottle and raises an eyebrow. "This isn't some random point where you poison us all and run off to Malibu with some bimbo, is it?" I grab her by the shoulders, looking her dead in the eye. "I'm asking you to trust me. Just drink half the bottle, split the rest with the kids, okay? I need you to do that for me right now. Just drink half." Sandy is clearly worried now, but she undoes the cap on the bottle. "Okay, Fred, okay. Calm down." She takes a swig, then another until the bottle is half empty, and caps it. "So I drank it. What?" She trails off and suddenly closes her eyes, opening them again and looking right into my eyes. "Oh, wow. That's probably the best water I ever drank." I nod. "Make sure you give it to the boys, okay? I left something at the worksite and I need to go get it." Sandy just nods. "I love you, Fred." I let go of her shoulders. "I love you too. Just make sure the kids drink that and keep the doors locked, okay? Don't let anyone inside." Sandy just nods again. "Okay, Fred, be careful." She walks up the stairs and waves, smiling serenely as I rush out the door, lock it, and make my way to my truck. In retrospect, I should have kissed her. I was driving swiftly, fast enough to be a little worried, but not fast enough to get pulled over. I got to the gate of the worksite in roughly an hour, which was a pretty good time for my house. I saw the gate wasn't chained up anymore, which seemed odd because Timothy had to undo that chain every time. Did he never leave the mansion after they closed the doors? I drove down the driveway and hit my brights, knowing it might be dark in that main hallway, and ran to the doors. "Timothy, open up!" I slammed my fist on the door. "Damn it, Timothy, open the damn door!" I look to see there's no padlock on the door and jostle the old doorknob, swinging the doors open. "Chavez? Timothy!" I shouted into the empty room, expecting an echo, but I heard no such sound. I'm hit with a musty scent, the smell of rotting wood and mildewed fabric. I look around, pulling out a flashlight. The boards are letting light in from the front, and there are no statues, no marble floor, just a set of collapsed staircases and a rotting subfloor with a few ripped and torn rugs and graffiti. I take a step outside and just confirm it's the same place, then peek back inside. The barricades are gone. The marble ceilings, the walls, the seamless floor. It's as if it was never there. I run through the ruins of this ancient mansion. The mansion is mundane, old, too ruined to fix, should be knocked down. I try a door or two, each opening to rotting room after rotting room. I eventually become overwhelmed with the fungus in the air, and I stumbled out the door, falling to my knees near my car. As I tried to catch my breath, I tried to figure out what the hell was going on. I turned to look at the old mansion behind me, and I could only think of one thing. The site we were working on was gone, or was never here in the first place, and the amber was gone with it.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. and there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
You've been listening to Restoration Part 1 by Jordan Eilbert. Jordan Eilbert is a longtime sci-fi and horror enthusiast. He focuses on character-driven stories to create intricate worlds and leave readers wanting more. Along with his co-author, Mimi Jasso, he is also the author of the Guardian Temple series, with the most recent book, The Broken Throne of Heaven, having been released in March 2026. You know, it's just like my grandma used to say. The only thing worse than being hounded by a demonic entity and breaking into a giant marble gallery covered in blood is when you get there and the dang thing is just gone. She was senile in her later years. For now, we leave Freddy in a rough spot. But don't worry, all will be revealed and resolved when we finish up Restoration next week, for better or for worse. Until then, thanks to Jordan Eilbert for tonight's entertainment, and I also extend my deepest thanks to all of you listeners for joining me. I'll be back next week with more Horror Hill. In the meantime, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot, and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at spinquest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.